Final hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've had another loaded show for you again today. I love when time is flying by, and this final hour is going to be no different. We're going to start off with our weekly chat with Chris Mason, Willie's partner in the television booth on Fox Sports Tennessee, and of course, former Predator goaltender. He now joins us. C-Mace, what's up?
Not much. Just enjoying a beautiful couple days, especially when it was supposed to rain all week and ended up being pretty darn nice. So just taking advantage of the nice weather. How about
Amen.
You guys?
Amen to that. Over the weekend, I was looking at the forecast and I'm like, oh my gosh, 80%, 70%, 80%.
Yeah.
We practiced baseball Monday night, nothing. Didn't rain till after we were done at 8:15.
Yeah.
And we've really had virtually nothing here. So I'm glad they messed with that. Yeah. Before we get into the hockey stuff, because there's been some news. Well, I kind of want to follow up with what we were talking about last week, and we were talking about the mentality, right? If you can actually teach it, if you can actually coach having the right mentality, what it takes at the level of playing that you played at. So that's more of an adult professional athlete. But we said we were going to get into, you know, on the youth side, because the three of us have kids. We also teach and coach, and the question is, can you actually instill that? Can you teach that, you know, at a much, much younger age? Or do you just have to have that in your DNA? Is that the only way, you know, a kid can have that makeup? And I went on and asked Tim Hasselbeck last hour, because he's got three kids, and they're all playing sports, and he believes that you can teach it. Now, he did say that he believes – it really needs to come from home and from your sport, right? Your coach, whether it's us or another coach. So you're getting it from both ends, right? You're getting it from home and from your team slash coach. So let's follow up with, you know, on the youth side. Can you actually teach to have the right mentality to compete in youth sports?
I really think you can. I just think it's not something that – necessarily can be rammed down someone's throat or forced on someone. I think it's something that, you know, to a certain extent you have to organically let happen. And I know, you know, we're all, sometimes you get caught up in, well, why can't you just go out there and work hard? And, you know, all those types of things, and just keep your eye on the ball. And, you know, all those types of things that you hear all the parents saying is, I don't know why she doesn't, you know, just run harder when she's stealing a base or anything like that. But One incident that really struck a chord with me early when Avery started softball was their plan and their, you know, their rec team to start. And then we kept the girls together for a couple years, and they started to get pretty good. And, you know, we started travel ball. And the first tournament we went to, the girls were out there and they played this, you know, this really good team. They were, you know, polished, did all the things, and they're really good. And our girls just got absolutely, like, the first inning, I think they gave up like 15 runs or something like that. They're down 15-0, and I will never forget, one of the girls was in the on deck circle, and she's just laughing and smiling, and you know, she's swinging her bat, getting ready to go up, and she looks at us and looks at the dad that's keeping score, and she goes, "Are we winning?" they just got pumped like 50 runs, and all the parents are like, "Oh boy, I don't know if this is a good decision," but it just really struck a chord that like they were having fun. They you know, that wasn't the top. Their first priority wasn't winning a ball game, nor it should be at that age. Because when you're, you know, 7, 8 years old, and I know from when I played, I don't remember any of those games. I just remember I loved the game. I loved to play. I loved to be with my friends. I loved to go play hockey. You know, the winning part, I think, you know, it's clicked in now. My daughter Avery's 13, she's going to be 14, and all the same girls that were on that team that, you know, didn't know if they're winning 20-0 or losing 20-0 after the first inning, that they're just happy to be together with the, you know, with their friends and doing an activity that they love to do, because there wasn't the pressure to win. And, you know, they couldn't really grasp that concept. And I don't think it, you know, necessarily should be, you know, imposed on a child that just wants to have fun playing a game. And I think that the timing of that, and you can also, you know, gradually just, you know, put in little suggestions and you know, there's always good teaching moments for, you know, situations that come up within a game. You know, I love about sports is, you know, the one thing is it's not constant failure, but you know, when you play ball or whatever sport, you're gonna strike out. You know, you're gonna make a bad play. But the beauty of it is you don't have long till you have your next opportunity to contribute and help the team out again. So it's a really good, I think, mentally strengthen kids and to go through those experiences and all those types of things, and maybe just slowly introduce. But to me, the most important thing is a love and a passion for what you're doing and to have fun doing it. And then if they love doing it and they want to put in the time and effort, then I really think you can, you know, start working on those, those things we look at the higher elite levels and pro mentality type of things.
Well, what would be your tip? Because what if the passion is there, the drive is there, the talent is there? What if all that those ingredients are there? As you said, you know, because we've taken the similar path as, you know, rec ball. And then once you get in the travel ball world, look, you know, it changes everything. It's sometimes, you know, you run up against teams, it's just relentless. I mean, they're well-oiled machines, and you realize, wow. But when you get to the level where you then can compete, where you're now at the level where you can compete with everybody, and you're right there, and you're losing heartbreakers to those teams, and you feel like the only missing ingredient is, you know, maybe it's in their own heads. The only thing is, you know, they make a mistake, they slump their shoulders, or they get down, or they get sad. You know, what's the tip to getting, if all the other ingredients is there, and you're just trying to get them out of that, you know, slumping or I made a mistake, you know, I'm going to put my head down mentality?
Well, I think to me, it's perspective. It's the bigger picture. You know, all these things that I've learned from my experiences through going through exactly those things, letting in a bad goal and when I was younger, and it affected me the whole game because you're so upset that you let the team down or you lost the game for the team. And I actually had this situation on the weekend with my daughter Avery, is they lost their last game on Saturday, and she was upset because she didn't get a hit in the last two games. She got a walk, and then she got out the other two times, and she was upset about that. And I said the exact same thing. I said, "Hon," I said, it's tough. You guys played a really good team and you didn't get a hit. I said, but guess what? Tomorrow's what counts. You got an opportunity to help the team out tomorrow. And I said, that's the beauty of sports, is that you always have another opportunity. It's just, you have to, you know, rely on your experiences before. And I said, the bad things, the strikeouts, and I always put this, you forget about this too, is look at the best players in the world, the best college softball players, the best baseball, hockey players. They get lit up. Pecorine gets pulled from games. The best players to ever play the game, you know, they fail. They have tough games. You know, it doesn't always go your way, but the ability to be able to bounce back and to put that behind you, learn from it, move on, and then get ready and get focused, you know, for your next opportunity and be ready for that is such a thing that I think that, you know, kids don't necessarily understand. They just, you know, they feel the raw emotion of, you know, the disappointment, and it just sits there. And it's obviously, we all know it's not easy to do. It's not a great thing to carry around. But the thing about sports and life is what's done is done. There's nothing you can do about it. But you have another opportunity to succeed or to help your team. And I think little things like that, I think, you know, a lot of times kids, I know our ball team, you know, one game and they'll go out and they'll look amazing. Like, oh, there they got to figure out the next game. You know, it's just the inconsistency. But you can introduce, you know, the importance of preparing the same way. You know, you can have fun and stuff in between games, but when you go up on the field and you're in between those lines, you start focusing and you know, thinking of the things that you have to do to be successful, you know, at every at-bat. If there's, you know, a runner on first and second, you're telling yourself the scenarios. Okay, well, if I get a, you know, she's a center fielder, if I get a ball that's hit hard to me deep in the field, I'm probably not going to get the run at third, so I want to go to second base. If it's a hard hit ground ball, you know, all those different types of things that you just prepare yourself, you know, at what to do. So when the situation arises, that you've been there before, you just did it in your mind. So as soon as you get that ball, you're not really thinking about, okay, now what do I have to do? You just do it because you already know and you just thought about it. So just those little, I think, you know, things like that about preparing and processing failure, being able to handle that, you know, and being able to move on, say, you know, yeah, that sucks, but I'm up to bat here, you know, in two innings, so I'll be ready the next time. That's kind of how I approach it. I mean, obviously there's different ways, and I've seen some of the bad ways of some, you know, parents and coaches that, you know, the way that they do to their team. I feel sorry for some of the kids, actually, because it's, you know, it's abusive, you know, behavior or mentality. I think that some of these kids that are, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old get talked to by their coaches and parents. But I'm just focused on, you know, I really believe in, like, positivity. And, you know, sometimes you got to, you know, as a coach, you got to, you know, drop the hammer on the kids a little bit and make them accountable in a appropriate way. But I just love to foster and teach positive, you know, positive reinforcement and solutions instead of why didn't you do this? And, you know, that type of thing, just solutions and suggestions and just teaching.
Yeah. It's such a complex topic. And it does come easier to some than others, I would say, in you know, responding to Darren's overall question, can it be taught? Yeah, it can be taught for sure. And yeah, it just seems like there are some people that are wired better for that kind of thing and some that do need to work on it more. And it's the same is true with other skills, too. You know, your strength might be my weakness, and we, you know, but we might still be trying to get to that same area where it becomes a strength. You have to work on your weaknesses regardless of what they are, and that could be a weakness.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. And, you know, to Darren's, you know, original, some kids are just wired that way. They want to do it. They're like, you know, you get up and sometimes you have to give your child a push to get out there and, you know, go hit some balls or whatever. And then sometimes they just want to do it. And, you know, some of the best players to ever, especially hockey, you know, Sidney Crosby, Jaromir Jagr, all these guys, the Connor McDavid's, all the guys that are the best of the best of the best. It's almost, I really believe it's an obsession, which I, you know, I don't believe in doing that with a kid. I believe balance is really important because if it becomes that consuming and, you know, something, God forbid, were to happen, you couldn't play a sport or whatever, I think that'd be pretty, you know, mentally damaging. But, you know, so we really believe in balance and trying other things and doing other activities and all that kind of thing. But some people are just wired like that. As a kid, and, you know, I talked to Willie a lot about this too. It didn't matter what sport, I had to be playing something. And Willie and I are still actually like that. Like when we go on the road, we've got to play shuffleboard. We got to play darts. We just need pickleball, whatever it is. Like we just love it. Like we live for that. It's just such a necessity in our life, that competition, challenging yourself, playing against, you know, playing against somebody and testing the limits and all that type of thing. And some people are just wired like that, and others aren't. But yeah, you can definitely teach it. And, you know, especially if you have the experience or, you know, you're a coach that's, you know, learning and taking, you know, seminars and clinics and, you know, learning new drills to challenge the kids and all those types of things. But there are those kids, there's no doubt, that's just what they do. It's just what they want to do. They just love it, love, love it.
So, Mace, looking at what's ahead for the players, is that the process has begun to get people back to where they're starting to work out. Hopefully they can stay on schedule for the training camp July 10th. We're waiting to hear where the hubs are going to be. I'm just looking at Sportsnet's website. I've been hearing the last couple of days, and we had Michael Russo on from Minneapolis. He was thinking Vancouver had the inside track, and now maybe there's a snag. I haven't seen all the details there, but hopefully sooner or later we're going to know where these hubs are going to take place. It does look like Vegas has got a good shot to be one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be interesting, and it'll be interesting to see who goes where, because if, let's say, it is Vegas and Vancouver, two Western cities, will they put Vegas in Vegas, or will they put, you know, the West in Vancouver and then have the East in Vegas? I don't know how they're going to do that, but that'll be very interesting to see. And I guess, you know, essentially every team is in the same boat. And I would think it would be like such a major advantage if you are Vegas, you get, you know, all your home facilities and everything. And I wonder if, you know, they would keep the home team at their own homes, or if they would have to quarantine in a hotel or something like that as well and be under the same guidelines as everybody else. But yeah, once that gets narrowed down, you're going to have 12 teams in one city. You're going to have enough. You're going to need enough practice facilities, enough common area and space to be able to house all these guys and the staff and everybody that's traveling with the team. I know the groups have been shrunk down a little bit, but they'll be carrying extra players. couple of goalies and a few extra players as well. So it'll be that. I'm really interested to see how are they going to schedule the games. Are they going to play, you know, two games a night, have an early game and a late game, and stagger it that way? Three games. Are you going to have an afternoon, you know, an early evening game, and then an 8 o'clock game? I'm very intrigued to see how this plays out, especially early on when all the teams, you know, all 12 teams in each hub city are involved in the games. But I can't wait. I'm excited. I hope there's no more, you know, snags medically that's really prohibiting any of these situations. I know Arizona had a little bit of a situation, and I think Tampa Bay too, with a few players testing positive. But you know, that's I guess it's inevitable when you think about it. If ever nobody's immune to this situation, it's just if they can control it and it's not as, you know, as bad, you know, health wise for the players and staff.
Right. Tampa Bay, just as you mentioned, they had to shut down on Friday. They are back open today, so that was a good sign. But there are going to be some positive tests, and hopefully they can move through this period, evaluate it, and move forward just like all of the sports. One thing we discussed yesterday, Mace, is can you envision what it would be like? And for some teams, it could be up to a couple months if you go very deep. Let's just say it is Vegas, and you know, we have this vision of the league basically taking over an area. Let's say you are in the bubble, which is, I think, what would have to be. And I can't see how it would be different for Vegas players. How I would think they would have to be in this bubble. But
yeah,
the bubble would include, I guess, many places to eat, hang out. I guess you would be seeing the same people all the time. I don't know if all 12 teams would be in the same vicinity. But, you know, we're just trying to get a visual of what that would be like. But just being able to get through it, you know, psychologically, staying sharp, getting ready for these huge games, trying to win a championship. I guess for some it would be easier than others who do like to just get away from it. You know, sometimes you do just need to get away from your teammates for a day or for a few hours anyway. So this will be an interesting thing for just human nature.
It will. But, you know, the one I say it definitely will. And you're right. Like some people, you know, they can thrive in that situation. Some people, you know, they need to be alone and they need their time and space. No question for their mental health. But I think, you know, for the majority of people, especially hockey players, you know, they love routine. You just love the routine of it. I've been in, you know, a situation that's kind of similar, I guess Olympic athletes, when they go to the Olympic Village and, you know, they're part of that experience. I've been to World Championships where it's really all your meals are at the same place. You're at the same hotel. You do everything together. So you're kind of on that clock for, you know, that if you go to the finals in the World Championships, you're looking at probably a month total from when you first go into the training camp and then have the exhibition games and the tournament. And that's a long time. And you know, I know when we did that, our families were allowed to come over for the medal round when that started. So, you know, you'd be away for 3 weeks and then, you know, you look forward to your family being there for the rest of the tournament, which was, you know, you could just see everyone's demeanor and the morale change a lot when the family members were able to be a part of the experience as well, because it is a long time. And I know you're so focused on obviously the hockey, and that's going to be the focal point anyway of what you're thinking about and what you're trying to do. So I think that helps to have something that important to be playing for, to really help with the situation. But there's no doubt it's going to be, you know, this is uncharted for the NHL. And I don't know if there will be, you know, families coming in or anything like that. That will be a part of it. And I think when they're, you know, initially having the talks, they mentioned that, you know, the players won't be away from their family for 2 months or months at a time. So it will be interesting. And I'm sure they're taking that into consideration, and it'll be they're going to have a number of options, some entertainment things. And I don't know if golf is one of them or something, just to kind of get away from it all. Yeah. Ping pong and just all those
shuffleboard, you know, darts.
Shuffleboard,
you got to have all
darts,
that, right?
There you go. Pickleball. We can go in there and do a pickleball tutorial, Willie. I'm down for that.
If they let us in the bubble, that's going to happen. Yeah. There's no question. If we're in there, there's going to be pickleball.
Oh, yeah, 100%. If we're in the mix, we'll find that. Heck, I'll bring tape and we can tape up a parking lot or something.
Good stuff as always, Chris. Really appreciate the visit. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good talking.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Chris Mason, Willie's partner in the television booth on Fox Sports Tennessee, of course, former Predators goaltender, and he joins us every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Chris Mason. I like that we've gotten little angles in there with Tim Hasselbeck and C-Mace today about youth sports. It's always fun to talk about this. Some of the fun and crazier topics we've done over the years, going back way back, was talking about youth sports. I mean, some really, really good and some very, very spirited. But these today were in the really, really good category. We've also talked about, you know, Davidson County trying to work to phase four and possibly the Sounds having two teams play at First Horizon Park and play against each other for obviously a very limited schedule. I just saw here, Willie, where masks will be required beginning today for people who go out in public in Wilson County. So to my knowledge, that's the first I've heard of that from a county, unless I'm missing something. That's kind of big news, isn't it?
I think so, in terms of required. And then I think what goes with that is you better be prepared to enforce that, right? You're probably going to have some people going around saying, you're in violation. You know, here's a fine. I know there have been businesses that, you know, have been cited for not complying with the regulations. So I think it's good. I mean, come on. If we want to get to phase four, and I know you're talking about Wilson County.
Yes.
But if we want to get to phase four, you got to put that, and all you got to do is put on a mask. If that gives you a better chance, then why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, we've just got to do it.
So that is coming from the mayor's office in Wilson County that moving forward, they're going to be required, starting today, to you're going to be required to wear a mask if you go out in public. So
it helps. The mask helps. If you listen to any health expert, you're helping yourself, but you're also protecting others. And the collective effect lowers the cases, and that's what it's all about. We got to keep that case number down.
No doubt about it. Something that we haven't touched on yet that's been a huge story that we've certainly talked about this week, but really haven't done the follow-up to the news that broke after we were off the airwaves yesterday, and that was the investigation going on at Talladega Speedway, right? You had the local authorities, you
twist.
Had NASCAR, and you had the FBI all involved trying to get to the bottom of, you know, the noose that was found in the garage area of Bubba Wallace. And the news that came out was that the FBI determined that it was not Bubba Wallace was not a victim of a hate crime, and that the pull, they're calling it a pull rope, I guess on the garage door, was fashioned like a noose, that it had been that way and been there since last October. And remember, this was Bubba Wallace's crew, someone from his crew that noticed it this weekend. It wasn't Bubba Wallace. In fact, I don't even think he saw it, but it was someone from his team that, I guess, reported it to NASCAR officials. But the FBI did their thorough investigation, local authorities and NASCAR, and it was the FBI that came out and said, look, I guess they had looked at a bunch of footage, which that's why I said I was very strong on Monday. Like, they will figure this out. I know that area, and they will have cameras, and it's a small group. And they will figure this out, and indeed, if indeed, you know, this is something that happened, that took place over the weekend, and as we found out yesterday, according to the FBI, it did not. This is going back from last October. So, real turn of events, right? A real twist to the story that I'm not sure we thought it was going to play out that way, but indeed it did.
And I'm not sure, you know, how to feel about it. It's so strange. I saw Bubba Wallace this morning, CBS this morning, do an interview. And, you know, you could tell he was kind of mentally drained. He was a little down
sure
about the whole thing. it had to be really hard for him, because unfortunately some of the backlash, it sort of implies that it was a hoax that he sort of orchestrated somehow, which is the furthest thing from the truth, right? He had nothing to do with this.
Like I said, I don't even think
saw
it. Was it the report?
No, he never did. He never did see it.
Yeah.
He was shown a photo of it. He was made aware of it by the NASCAR people. And it was tied into the shape of a noose, right? But apparently,
well, he's been adamant about that, right? That it was indeed the shape of a noose. I mean,
it was. But I guess the issue is it was there was evidence, I guess, via footage or a photo that it was like that as far back as October, before they would have ever known that it was Bubba Wallace that was going to be in that particular garage. Now, why that happened, who did it then, is unanswered, I guess. But I think the important thing to take forward, I hope, is that there was an authentic response to what they thought happened, and that should be still the lasting memory here. But to somehow turn this at all, if any, and I think it's a very small percentage of people that think this, that this was something that Bubba had something to do with, I think that's what he's trying to process through right now, right? Because, I mean, what an odd way to end the film. I don't know. Like I said, I felt bad for him trying to do this interview this morning in light of this.
Well, there's got to be some relief to it, but still draining, right? This has been a whirlwind of, 48 to 72 hours for Bubba Wallace. This has been a lot to take in. And so I'm sure he is mentally drained. And, oh, by the way, he had to go out and race on Monday as well at Talladega, which is not an easy race. So I'm sure this has absolutely been draining. In fact, I think, Marquise, we've got a clip. Wasn't he on CNN last night doing an interview? I know he's kind of made his rounds. Do we have
clip
readily available? Here's Bubba Wallace last night.
Have you seen ropes like that hanging from garages? Is that typical?
Don, the image that I have and I have seen of what was hanging in my garage is not a garage pool. I've been racing all my life. We've raced out of hundreds of garages that never had garage pools like that. So people that want to call it a garage pool and put out old videos and photos of knots being in their as their evidence, go ahead. But from the evidence that we have, that I have, it's a straight up noose. The FBI has stated it was a noose over and over again. NASCAR leadership has stated that it was a noose. I can confirm that. I actually got evidence of what was hanging in my garage, over my car, around my picker guys, to confirm that it was a noose. And never seen anything like it. It's not something. I talked to my crew chief about it. I said, is this something like, I wanted to make sure we weren't jumping the gun. And I said, this isn't a knot. This isn't just a regular old what you call it. He's like, Bubba, this isn't something that can be done within a second of just tying a knot and being on the way. This is something that took time.
So what are you saying here? Are you saying that you don't believe? Do you believe that it was intended for you in that way? Or are you... What are you saying here?
It was a noose. It was a noose that was whether tied in 2019 or whatever. It was a noose. So it wasn't directed at me, but somebody tied a noose. That's what I am saying.
Because that area was obviously different in the fall race at Talladega. So I think it was the Wood Brothers that were in that garage stall. It was not Bubba Wallace. So it is a little perplexing. But to know that was there in October, and so I don't know. It certainly did not have the ending or the conclusion that we thought. I don't think it takes away from anything that took place on Monday, the scene, the powerful moment pre-race, and what will happen moving forward. I don't think that changes anything. In fact, Bubba Wallace put out a tweet that said, "It's been an emotional few days. First off, I want to say how relieved I am that the investigation revealed that it wasn't what we feared it was. I want to thank my team, NASCAR, and the FBI for acting swiftly and treating this as a real threat. I think we're gladly take a little embarrassment over what the alternatives could have been. Make no mistake, though. Some will try. This should not detract from the show of unity we had on Monday and the progress we've made as a sport to be a more welcoming environment for all. That's why I said let's not let this change the message moving forward. The message should continue to be the same of what we've experienced in the sport of NASCAR and around this for the last 48 hours, 48 to 72 hours. And I hope that's the case. They've got two races in Pocono. We'll find out how the coverage and how that goes this weekend.
Well, and that was something that came through in the interview this morning with CBS. Remember, this is not a sports interview, right? These were not people that interview athletes all the time, right? This is a news show. And he was clearly just emotionally drained, right? I think it was early in the morning. I'm assuming they taped it. If they didn't tape it, it was actually live early in the morning where he was. And you could tell he was just... It was hard for him to answer all the questions that he obviously has. But one thing he said that certainly was important is that he was just really ready to get to the next chapter, right? The next race. And I do think he's got a huge amount of support. And I think it's going to be very important for NASCAR to continue to move the ball forward here with this, right? Let's build off of this. That's the most important thing. Long term, because I do think the response was iconic, right? We're always going to remember that. What happened, regardless of the circumstances that we find out later, I think it was an authentic response, and let's hope that is what we carry forward with us.
No doubt about it. We will come back and close up shop on this Wednesday. We'll get into a couple more things before we get out of here. On the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Want to add a little clarification with what I wrote, or what I read, excuse me. There's been an update to what I brought up in Wilson County. The update is, and I saw Josh Breslow tweet this out, is that after being questioned about the wording of this emergency declaration for Wilson County and wearing masks, the mayor now says their office has no enforcement power, and that... instead of using the word requiring, they are strongly suggesting that people wear masks in public. So,
well, this has been the quandary, I think, for all of us from the very start. Right? Is where do you draw the line of, hey, we got to do this. You know, we can't just strongly recommend it. If you're not getting the message, we got to go to the next step. Right? How do you do that? Without people going, oh, you know, it's my right. I don't have to do it. You know, there's a lot of people that push back, and I don't get that.
Well, there's no doubt that there's a reason why I hadn't seen that anywhere else, because it wasn't out there anywhere else, because that's probably why the mayors of these counties do not have the power or the ability to actually say you are required to wear a mask. So I guess the update for Wilson County is the mayor is asking residents of Wilson County that they are strongly suggesting that you wear a mask when you're out in public.
There's got to be a step in between, right? There's got to be some kind of push that goes beyond we strongly suggest, because there's just too many people that are oblivious or don't want to do it for whatever reason, and that's hurting everybody else. It's bringing the caseload up as a result.
Yeah, I think, quite honestly, strongly suggesting people wear a mask in public should be a given at this point.
It should be, yeah, especially inside, right? Unless you're physically eating. I mean, when you're inside especially, or even if you're outside but near a lot of people, it should be automatic. It should be automatic.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the rules that we lightly touched on earlier that has been tossed out there on how MLB is going to try to tackle this 60-game season and just kind of talk about thumbs up, thumbs down. What do we think? Where do you want to start?
All right, I'll throw this one at you to start with. And I will say this. You know where I'm going to be coming from with a lot of this. I am a baseball purist for the most part. I don't like fundamental rule changes. Extra innings will start with a base runner on second base. I know this has been done in the minor league, but the major league level, I don't like it. I can do with it this year. I get it. You know, let's try to get these games done and let's avoid the long ones. But I hope long term this doesn't stick. I'm just not a fan of this. I'm guessing though that you're all right with it.
Well, I don't know if I'm all right. I mean, let me put it this way. I'm all right with anything and everything for this for 2020, right? As we've stated on the show,
I have to come along with that. I'm all right with that. If it helps get through the season, then let's do it.
Yeah, but I mean, you kind of have to go on the premise of 2020. Heck, everything's in play. I mean, you can't be choosy in 2020. Okay, but I will say this. I don't know if I necessarily – I want to see it. I do. I want to see how this plays out. I don't want to necessarily say that I'm for it because I may absolutely think it's ridiculous once we see it. With that being said, it's going to fall into the category for 2020. Everything applies, and it's okay. It's just – that's just how it's going to have to be. And then we can come to some more conclusions. What I am in favor of, as you well know, there are things I've been bringing up for decade to 15 years about baseball that I think now have a chance of possibly changing that I have said for a long, long time need to change. One is the season's too long, period. Now, I'm not saying trim it back to 60 games, but I've been saying for 15-plus years, you don't need 162 games to figure out who should belong in your playoffs. Like, it's got to be cut way down. I'm not saying 60. I think 60 is way too short, but I'm saying there's going to be some type of effect coming out of this, whether it's craziness and people are all in watching the final 3 days of baseball because it determines of whether the A's or the Twins or, you know, pick a team, any team. Porth, your Reds, that sounds like a stretch. Your Mets, Willie, my Indians, they may be playing for a playoff spot. And it's got all these teams in a jumbled mess. And it's going to create excitement, which, you know, rarely is there real excitement. Yes, it does happen. But so many teams are so far out of it. It's not excitement coming down the stretch of a regular season, for the most part, as a whole. For the league this year, it may be real drama. I think it's going to create that discussion piece. The other thing is, I've said, there is no reason. You know I've been adamant about it, and I know you don't like it. I know you bristle. And I'm not saying this is the solution. I'm not saying I have the solution. The only thing is I know that in game 79 of the regular season, or game 101, or pick your number of game 22. It doesn't need to go 16 innings on a Tuesday night. It just doesn't. Like nobody has time
for
that anymore.
You're in favor of something like the shootout.
I'm in favor of something.
Like in hockey, we have the shootout. We have the 3-on-3, so that the game doesn't go triple overtime. But in playoffs, you would go with triple overtime if needed, 15 innings if needed.
Playoffs are going to be just like hockey. Like that, it's scrapped. When playoffs, you're playing to the end.
Okay.
That's a different animal. Game 37, game 77, game 101 does not need a 14-inning game on a Monday night. It just doesn't. That's always been my opinion, and you know that.
Right. And so I have to be open-minded to that. I just hate it for the pitcher, right, who comes into the game. It's the 10th inning. There's a guy on second. He's not responsible for that guy on second, right? He didn't let that guy on there.
No.
And he gives up a broken bat single that ends the game. So he gets the loss, right? I was talking to Jeff Hem about this earlier because he's been watching this happen at the AAA level the last couple of years. So what they do is the guy on second base starts as if there's a team error, right? So if the pitcher gives up the run, or whenever the pitcher gives up the run, it's not an earned run. And so I was wondering about that. It doesn't go on his stats, but it's still a loss, right? You still that feeling you have to walk off the mound. You're the loser, even though you had nothing to do with how the guy got on second base.
Are you credited right? with the loss?
Yeah, you're credited with the loss.
But why
and
is
so
that?
Some good relievers could have three or four losses.
Now wait a minute.
Yeah, but that's the way it goes.
In hockey, they don't count that the shootout. Why would baseball do that? Like you don't get third goal of the game in the NHL in a shootout, you don't get that. It doesn't count as a hat trick. Right?
No, you don't get a goal. But in baseball, you have to have you get a run batted in if you knock the run in.
I'm not sure how I feel about
run,
that.
Well, that's what I wanted from the start. It screws up the stats, right? It's a different, and that's why hockey does it that way too. Now the goalie still takes the overtime loss. It goes on the loss column in the overtime loss category, right? If you lose a shootout, gets a point, that makes some sense.
But it's clearly a separate category, right?
Well, it's the same category whether you lose in the shootout or lose in the overtime. But yeah, it is a separate category.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's not for this. I mean, it's not an extra inning loss that you get on the pitcher. Now, maybe they should create a category for the pitcher.
Well,
extra
that's
inning
where
losses.
I was going. That's where I was
it might,
going.
It might
that.
Be. It might be the way to go. Right.
Yeah. I think there's ways to I guess play with this. Right, and figure this out where you can come up with something that would appease people more, and I'm okay with that. I don't know what the gimmick is. Look, you know, diehard, staunch hockey fans, there's a ton of them that hate the shootouts, and I'm okay with the shootouts during the regular season. It's just it's fun for the fans. Yes, it's not the purity of the game. It's a shootout. It's kind of a gimmicky thing. But on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night in an 82-game schedule, that's what needs to happen. Okay? You don't want to be at the arena on a Tuesday night till 11:37 at night, Central time.
No, that makes sense. That
okay?
makes sense.
Okay? And hockey and baseball is no different. Like I said, I don't have the answer on what it is. I want to see this. I don't know if I'm going to like it or not. And I don't have the answer of what it is. I just know that there's got to be a way to end these games much quicker. There's got to be a way to speed up extra innings. That's all
right.
I'm saying.
So that's what they're going to do. So we'll be ready to watch and observe. Here's the other one I wanted to hit you with. The designated hitter will be used in both leagues. And this, a lot of people feel, is going to be permanent, that we have seen the last of the old National League rules of the pitcher hitting. So for me, okay, I'm a Mets fan. I look at the roster, and I see a guy named Yoenis Cespedes, right, who seems to have a lot of trouble keeping his body together. But when he's on the field, he is a heck of a hitter. The Mets may benefit greatly from that. I look at a lot of other National League teams. I'm not sure they have an obvious DH that they could put in there. So that is going to definitely factor in on the National League rosters and what they might do between now and the start of the season. Right now you have to account every day having a DH instead of just the interleague games. So do you like that?
Well, you know the answer because I've said it for that too for a long time that both leagues – need the DH. You know how I feel about the DH. You know I love the DH. I don't want to see the pitchers bat. I don't want to see pitchers bat. Why does the National League get four extra? Why do they only have to record 23 outs legitimately? Because that's what it is for the most part. I know later in the game there's a good chance to get pinch hit, but you don't have to record 27 outs in the National League. And typically you're given at least 2 to 3 outs because the pitchers, I don't want to see them bat. There's no point in it. Zero. And you know I've always felt that way. So I have always said both leagues need the DH. I know all the National League haters because I've had to deal with it for years. Every time I say it, oh, my gosh, that's the stupidest thing ever. And, oh, I love the strategy. Oh, yes, it's such strategy without a DH. Oh, my gosh. The National League managers are so much smarter than American League managers. So, of course, I'm all for this. And, yes, it's long overdue. And I do believe that and I don't think – and you know how I feel about DH. As I said, it's a part of the game. They should be rewarded. Edgar Martinez, I have said for a long time, belongs in the Hall of Fame. He's been a great hitter, and I get it. He spent most of his time as a DH. Well, there was also a guy that spent a lot of time as a DH that everybody loves and had no problem with him going to Cooperstown, but for whatever reason, Edgar Martinez didn't get the same amount of love. It's a part of the game. I think it will help the game. I think it'll make it more exciting. Pitchers batting do not make it exciting. And so I do hope that coming out of this, this is what it is moving forward.
Well, I've come around to this, Darren. I think I, for a long time, said I like the contrast between the style of play in the two leagues, and I still believe that, but if that's what happens here and we have a DH going forward in all games, I can live with that. But I am curious how general managers feel from National League teams that you have this happening now. You didn't really plan for it. And if you happen to have your roster might all you might just look at your roster and you happen to have some guys like, boy, that's perfect. This guy can DH against righties. I got this guy over here who can DH against lefties. I'm good. But there might be some teams that are like, wait a minute, I didn't know we were going to have a DH. Who's our DH?
Right.
You see that sometimes in interleague games where, David Ortiz is DHing for the Red Sox, and then the team they're playing. Let's say they're playing the Mets and a guy like Matt Franco is the DH. You're like, who? What? It's a guy on your bench that is, a pinch hitter. He's not going to play every day. So it's a different deal. But now at least it's the same for both leagues.
Yep. I do think that one will stick. We are going to say goodbye. That's going to do it for Wednesday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Enjoy the rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.